Chapter 5. A shot has been fired. A stone has been loosed. A dark hand has reached in among us. We fled before a shadow, but we have run in a circle, and the shadow has overtaken us. We have clamored and searched. We steeled ourselves, and yet have surrendered. We tried to elude it, yet it sprang upon us. We lost our way, yet we still ran on further. But ever we felt the shadow at our heels and tried to escape it. We thought it was pursuing us. We did not know we were dragging it with us. That there where we were, it was also, silently standing, not behind us, but within us, in us ourselves. We thought to build us houses. We desired gardens with terraces, for we wanted to look out upon the sea and to feel the wind. But we did not think that a house needs foundations. We are like those abandoned fields full of shell holes in France, no less peaceful than the other plowed lands about them. But in them are lying still the buried explosives, and until these shall have been dug out and cleared away, to plow will be a danger both to plower and plowed. We are soldiers still without having been aware of it. Had Albert's youth been peaceful and without interruption, then he would have had many things familiar and dear to him that would have grown up with him, and that now would have sustained and kept him. But all that was broken in pieces, and when he returned, he had nothing. His repressed youth, his gagged desires, his hunger for home and affection then cast him blindly upon this one human being whom he supposed that he loved. And when that was all shattered, he knew of nothing but to shoot. He had been taught nothing else. Had he never been a soldier, he would have known many another way. As it was, his hand did not falter. For years he has been accustomed to shoot and not to miss. In Albert, the dream-ridden adolescent, in Albert, the shy lover, there still sat Albert, the soldier. The wrinkled old woman cannot realize it.
But how could he have done it? He was always such a quiet child.
The ribbons of her old lady's cap are trembling. The handkerchief is trembling. The black mantilla is trembling. The whole woman is one quivering piece of anguish.
Perhaps it is because he has had no father. He was only 4 when his father died. But then he was always such a quiet, good child.
And so he is still, Frau Troska, I say. She grasps at the straw and begins to talk of Albert's childhood. She must talk, she says. She can't bear it anymore. The neighbors have been in, and acquaintances, 2 teachers, too. None of them could understand it. What they should do is to hold their tongues, I say. They're to blame for it, partly. She looks at me uncomprehendingly. But then she runs on again and tells me how Albert first learned to walk, how he never cried like other children. Indeed, how he was almost too quiet for a young boy. And now, to have done a thing like this. But how could he have done it? I look at her and wonder. She doesn't know anything about Albert. It would probably be the same with my mother. Mothers know only how to love. That is their one understanding. But Frau Troska, I say warily, Albert has been at the war, you must remember.
Yes, yes, she replies.
But she does not see the connection.
This Barcher, was he a bad man?
She then asks quietly. He was a blackguard, I affirm roundly, for I don't mind betting he was. She nods in her tears.
I couldn't understand it otherwise. He never hurt a fly in his life. Hans, now he did pull their wings off, but Albert, never. What do you think they will do to him now?
They can't do much, I say to comfort her. He was very excited, you see,
and that is almost the same as doing it in self-defense. Thank God, she sighs. The tailor upstairs said he would be hanged for it.
Then the tailor's mad, I retort.
Yes, and he said Albert was a murderer, too. And he isn't. Never, 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 she bursts out.
You leave that tailor to me. I'll fix him, I say savagely.
I hardly dare to go outside the door now, she sobs. He is always standing there.
I'll come along with you, Frau Troska, I say. We reach the outer door of the house.
There he is again,
whispers the old woman fearfully, and points to the door. I brace myself. If he says one word, I will pound him to pulp, though it should cost me 10 years in the clink. But he gives us a wide berth, as do the two women also who are loafing there with him. Once inside the flat, Albert's mother shows me a picture of Hans and Albert as boys, and then begins to weep anew. But she stops again almost at once, as if she were ashamed. Old women are like children in that. Tears come to them quickly, but they dry up quickly also. In the passage, as I am about to go, she asks me,
Do you think he gets enough to eat?
Yes, I'm sure he does, I reply. Karl Brugger will see to that. He can get plenty.
I have still a few pancakes left. He likes them so much. Do you think they would let me take him some?
There's no harm in trying, I answer. And if they do let you, you just say this to him. Albert, I know you're not guilty. Nothing else. She nods.
Perhaps I did not think of him enough. But Hans, you see, Hans hasn't got any feet.
I reassure her.
The poor boy, she says. And now he is sitting there all alone.
I give her my hand. Now I'll just have a word with that tailor. He won't trouble you next time, I promise. The tailor is standing at the door. A commonplace, stupid little bourgeois face. He leers at me maliciously, his mouth ready to start blabbing as soon as I am gone. I take hold of him by the coat lapels. You bloody snip! If ever you say another word to the old lady up there, I'll knock bloody hell out of you. Hear me? You pack-thread athlete. You washerwoman. I shake him like a sack full of old rags and bump his backside against the knob of the door. You lousy, stinking skunk. If I have to come again, I'll break every bone in your body, you miserable, bloody scissors grinder. Then I land him one on each cheek. I'm already a long way off when he shrieks after me.
I'll take you to court. It will cost you 100 marks at the least.
I turn around and walk back. He disappears. Dirty and travel-worn, Georg Raha is sitting in Ludwig's room. He read the report about Albert in the newspaper and has come back at once.
We must get him out, says he.
Ludwig looks up.
With half a dozen bright fellows and a motor car, Raha continues, it couldn't possibly miss. The best time would be when he's being taken across to the courthouse. All we do is to jump in among them and make a bit of a shindy while two run with Albert to the car.
Ludwig listens a moment, then he shakes his head.
It's no good, Georg. We would only make things worse for Albert if it miscarried. As it is, he does at least stand a chance of getting off fairly lightly. Not that that's any argument. I'd be with you at once, but Albert, we wouldn't get Albert to come. He doesn't want to.
In that case, we'll just have to make him, explains Raha after a while.
He's got to get out. And if I once start...
Ludwig says nothing. I don't think it's any use either, Georg, I say. Even if we did get him away, he would only come straight back again. He almost shot Willy when he tried to lug him off. Raha puts his head in his hands. Ludwig looks gray and wasted.
It's my idea we are all lost, says he, hopelessly. No one answers. Silence and trouble weigh like death in the room. I continue to sit alone with Ludwig a long time. He props his head in his hands. It is all in vain, Ernst. We are finished. But the world goes on as if the war had never been. It won't be long now before our successors on the school benches will be listening, eager-eyed, to stories of the war, and wishing they had been there too, rid of all the tedium of school. Even now they are trooping to join the Free Corps, at 17 years guilty of political murder. I'm so tired, Ernst. Ludwig, I sit down beside him and put my arm about his slight shoulders. He smiles cheerlessly. Then he says quietly, I had a schoolboy love affair once, Ernst, before the war. I met the girl again a few weeks ago. She seemed to me to have grown even more beautiful. It felt as if those days had come to life again in one human being. We used to see each other fairly often afterwards. And then, all at once, I realized. He rests his head on the table. When he looks up again, his eyes are dead from anguish. Such things are not for me, Ernst. I am terribly sick. He gets up and opens the window. Outside, the night is warm, with many stars. I continue to stare before me, gloomily. For a long time, Ludwig stands there looking out. Then he turns to me. Do you remember how as youngsters we used to go off at night with a volume of Eichendorff into the woods? Yes, Ludwig, I answer quickly, glad that he is now thinking of something else. It was in late summer. One time we caught a hedgehog. His face relaxes. And we imagined it might turn into a real adventure, with stagecoaches and winding horns and stars. Remember that? How we wanted to go off to Italy? Yes, but the coach that was to take us never came, and we hadn't money for the train. Ludwig's face brightens, ever clearer and clearer. It looks almost unearthly, so serene it is. And then we started to read Werther, he says. And to drink wine, I prompt him. He smiles. And Green Heinrich. Remember how we used to whisper together about Judith? I nod. But afterwards you preferred Hölderlin to all the others. A strange peace seems to have come over Ludwig. He is talking easily and quietly. What schemes we had, and how noble and good we were to be. A nice mess we have made of it, Ernst. Poor ninnies. Yes, I said, meditatively. What has come of it all? Side by side we lean out over the windowsill. The wind is asleep in the cherry trees. They whisper softly. A shooting star falls. The clock strikes 12. We must be going to sleep. Ludwig gives me his hand. Good night, Ernst. Sleep well, Ludwig. Late in the night, someone thunders on my door. With a sudden start, I sit upright. Who's there? It's me, Carl. Open the door. I spring out of bed. He bursts in. Ludwig! I grab hold of him. What's wrong with Ludwig? Dead! The room spins around. I fall back on the bed. Get a doctor! Carl smashes a chair onto the floor so that it splinters. Dead, Ernst. Artery cut. I do not know how I put on my clothes. I do not know how I came here. But suddenly a room is there, piercing light, blood, and intolerable glitter and sparkle of quartzes and stones, and on a settle before it, an unutterably weary, thin, collapsed figure, a shockingly pale, sharp face with half-shut, extinguished eyes. I do not know what is happening.
The landlady is there. Carl is there. Noyce is there. One of them is speaking to me. To stay here. I understand. They want to fetch someone. I nod. I crouch on the sofa. Doors rattle. I cannot move, cannot speak. Suddenly, I am alone with Ludwig, and look at him. Carl was the last to be with him. He found him calm and almost gay. After he had gone, Ludwig put his few things in order and wrote for some time. Then he drew a chair to the window and set a basin with warm water on the table beside him. He locked the door, sat himself on the settle, and with his arm in the water, he cut the artery. The pain was slight. He saw the blood flowing, a scene he had often thought on. To let this hateful, poisoned blood pour out of his body. His room became very clear. He saw every hook, every nail, every glint of the quartzes, the iridescence, the colors. He absorbed it. His room. It gathered about him. It passed in with his breath and was one with his life. Then it receded, uncertain. His youth began in pictures. Eichendorff, the woods, homesickness, reconciled without pain. Beyond the woods rose up barbed wire entanglements, little white shrapnel clouds, the burst of heavier shells. But they alarmed him no longer. They were muffled, almost like bells. The bells became louder, but the woods were still there. The bells pealed in his head so loudly that he felt it must burst. Then it grew darker. The pealing sounded fainter. And the evening came in at the window. Clouds floated up under his feet. He had wished once in his life to see flamingos. Now he knew. These were flamingos, with broad, pinkish-gray wings. Lots of them. A phalanx. Did wild ducks not once fly so toward the very red moon, red as poppies in Flanders? The landscape receded farther and farther. The woods sank deeper. Rivers rose up, gleaming, silver and islands. The pinkish-gray wings flew ever higher and higher, and the horizon became ever brighter. Now, suddenly, a dark cry swelled in his throat, hot, insistent. A last thought spilled over out of the brain into the failing consciousness. Fear. Rescue. Bind it up. He tried to rise, staggering, to lift his hand. The body jerked, but already it was too weak. It spun round and spun round. Then it vanished. And the giant bird with dark pinions came very gently with slow sweeps, and the wings closed noiselessly over him. A hand pushes me away. People are there again. They are taking up Ludwig. I pull the first one away. No one shall touch him. But then all at once his face is before me, bright and cold, changed, harsh, strange. I know him no more, and stagger back, out. I do not know how I come to be in my room. My mind is vacant. My arms lie limp along the rests of the chair. I have done, Ludwig. I, too, have done. Why should I stay? We none of us belong here. Uprooted, burned, ashes. Why did you go alone? I stand up. My hands are hot, my eyes burning. I feel feverish. My thoughts are confused. I do not know what I am doing. Take me, I whisper. Take me too. My teeth chatter with cold. My hands are wet. I stumble forwards. Big black circles vibrate before my eyes. I stiffen suddenly. Was that a door? A window rattling? A shudder runs through me. I stagger up. In the moonlight through the open door of my room, I see my old tunic hanging on the wall beside the violin. I move toward it stealthily, on tiptoe, so that it shall not observe me. I sneak on this gray tunic that has destroyed so much of us, our youth and our life. I pull it down and think to fling it away, but then I smooth it lightly with my hand. I put it on. I feel it taking possession of me through the skin. I shiver. My heart thuds heavily in my throat. A note twangs out in the silence. I start and turn around. I take fright, press back against the wall. In the pale light of the open door stands a shadow. It sways and hovers. It comes nearer and beckons. A figure, a face with dark eye sockets, between them a great cleft gaping, a mouth speaking without sound. Is that? Walter, I whisper. Walter Willenbrock, killed in August 17 at Passendale. Am I mad then? Am I dreaming? Am I ill? But behind him, another is already pushing his way in. Pale, crippled, bowed down. Friedrich Tomberger, whose back was broken by a shell splinter at Soissons while he was sitting on the stairs of a dugout. And now they press in with dead eyes, gray and ghastly, a swarm of shadows. They have come back again and are filling the room. Franz Kemmerich, with his 18 summers, who had his leg amputated and died 3 days after. Stanislaus Kaczynski, with dragging feet and drooping head, whence trickles a thin, dark stream. Gerhard Feldkamp, blown to pieces by a trench mortar bomb at Ypres. Paul Boehmer, killed in October 18. Heinrich Wessling, Anton Heinzmann, Haya Westhus, Otto Mattes, Franz Wagner. Shadows, shadows. A long procession, an unending line, they press in. They perch on the books. They clamber up to the window. They fill the room. But suddenly the horror, the astonishment, breaks in me. For slowly a stronger, a darker shadow has arisen. Propped on its arms, it creeps in through the door. It takes on life. Bones grow within it. A body drags itself in. Teeth gleam chalky white out of the black face. Eyes now flash in the deep sockets. Rearing like a seal, he crawls in toward me, the English captain. And trailing behind him, rustling, the puttees. With a slight lurch, he flings himself upwards, reaches toward me with clutching hands. Ludwig! Ludwig! I cry. Ludwig, help me! I catch up piles of books and fling them at the hands. Bombs, Ludwig! I groan. I wrench the aquarium from its stand and heave it toward the door. It crashes and shatters in pieces. I hurl the butterfly case after it, the violin. I seize a chair and strike at that grin. Ludwig! I shout. Ludwig! I rush at him. I burst through the door. The chair crashes. I rush out, cries behind me, frightened cries. But louder, nearer, the gasping, panting. He is chasing me. I fly down the stairs. He stumps after me. I gain the street. He is there. I run. The houses rock. Help! Help! Squares, trees, a clutch at my shoulder. He has caught me. I roar, howl, stumble. Uniforms, fists, raging, flashes, and the full thunder of the gleaming axe that strikes me to the ground.